to try and sneak across the tracks, even if you don't see a train. Stop. Trains can't. Paid for by NHTSA.
Jab, right hook. Yeah, he's ready to deliver the next body blow. Guest hosting for Ron Arquette today, Greg Hughes.
Good afternoon, Salt Lake. It is Greg Hughes, Citizen Hughes, filling in for the great Ron Arquette here on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. I like to call it the Citizen Hughes Show, not the Ron Arquette Show. He's off. He's taking some well-deserved time off. So here I am. The Citizen Hughes Show. Boy, do we have a power-packed show for you this afternoon. It's Friday, right? I'm just going to get you ready for the weekend. We're going to have some great guests. So we've had a lot of... 2 days ago, I did my segment with Rod, and I was just on tilt about our southern border. And this idea that there are Border Patrol agents on the horses, and somehow because an East Coast, a liberal media member of the media doesn't understand what it takes to ride a horse or what reins look like, somehow this is now akin to racism or slavery or something worse. And the hyperbole and the reporting has just been so horrendous. And I talked about that 2 days ago, but this is the non-gift. This is the curse that keeps on cursing, okay? This is still going. The media has doubled down on this premise that somehow these border agents were acting in an illegitimate way, in a way that has required them to go on paid leave while it's being, air quote, investigated. So we're going to talk about it because it's still in the news. They're still talking about it. It turns out the horses are the bad guys. I didn't know maybe it's a bunch of Mr. Eds running around, if anyone remembers the old black and white Mr. Ed show. But apparently, these horses are the bad guys because they've been removed completely from the border. So the agents get removed that were on the horses, and then the horses themselves, they've been sent away because apparently when you have a border that no longer exists on our southern border, and you have this absolute, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's a migration of unprecedented levels, and these Border Patrol agents are doing their level best to try and maintain some level of rule of law. Now their job is even that much harder as they're not able to traverse this terrain in these areas without the horses, because now the horses are the bad guys too. We're not going to have horses over there. Boy, we're not going to build a wall. We're not going to secure the border. And darn it, we're not going to have these horses. That's the worst thing you could possibly do. So why I share all that with you is that we are going to have some interviews today, and we're going to get to the bottom of all this. We're going to have Laura Riles join us. She's with the Heritage Foundation, wicked smart on this issue, and she's going to talk about the border crisis. They are calling it a constitutional crisis, which I would agree, and we're going to get into the details about why this is not just a border crisis, but literally a constitutional crisis because of what has happened and what's transpired in the last 8 to 9 months. In the second hour of the program, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to get to the vaccine mandates. We're going to get to the treatments, the monoclonal antibody treatments that are out there that the IHC has researched and is providing, that is showing great results for those that have COVID early onset. They know they have COVID, they have the symptoms, they've been tested, but if they catch it early enough, This monoclonal therapy is seen to do wonderful things and can really prevent some of the severe hospitalizations and ICU bed capacity that people that are suffering from COVID find themselves in. Now, I don't know if you know, the description I just shared is apparently pretty draconian. That's pretty bad to talk about treatments, therapeutics, monoclonal antibodies, and the treatment. You can't talk about it, because if you do, apparently you must not believe in the vaccine, or there's a lot of narratives that are attached as we look and we understand that there are ways to treat people who have found that they have COVID-19. So we're going to talk in the second hour about the treatments that can be available, the multi-pronged attack the state of Utah has taken, but also try to combat this narrative about it all. So we're going to talk to Senate President Stuart Adams. He's been in the news. And I'm going to say, just from Citizen Hughes's point of view, as I've read the news reports, they got this guy all wrong. They keep trying to paint him as a radical or some crazy because he's talking about these treatments. Well, we're going to provide for you, the listeners, the truth. And you're going to hear from President Adams himself about why he is excited about this work that IHC has done and why physicians in the state of Utah need to understand it's available for patients and make sure that these treatments are part of our combating this virus. So we're going to talk to him in the second hour. We're also going to speak later in the program to Kane County Sheriff Tracy Glover, because I can't get off this border issue because it doesn't go away. It's the curse that keeps on cursing. And so we are going to talk to Kane County. I don't know if you've been to rural Utah, but if you've been there, you know that the horses are not foreign to this part of our state. We're going to talk to a fine, duly elected member of law enforcement, the duly elected sheriff, Tracy Glover. He's going to talk to us about horses, their role in terms of law enforcement, what reins look like and why the way that reins are used for the horses. And you're going to hear it. I'm not even going to say it from the horse's mouth. That's too bad of a pun. But you're going to hear the truth. We're going to tell the truth about the role that horses play in Border Patrol and law enforcement. I mean, do you remember the movies? I mean, I don't even know if they still do it, but New York City, they used to have, in Central Park, they had horses. I mean, I didn't see anyone going crazy and saying that's the worst thing and the world was ending, as you see the role that horses have played in law enforcement as well as our Border Patrol. But we're going to get the real deal, the real skinny. And then lastly, in the third hour, we have breaking news today about Vivint Home Arena is going to mandate that anyone that would attend a basketball game, a jazz game, a concert, any event inside the Vivint Home Arena, you will be required to produce evidence of having been vaccinated or a evidence that you have tested COVID-free and that you don't have COVID. And you're going to have to produce these medical receipts of a vaccination passport or some vaccination card or a clean test if you want to walk inside the Vivint Home Arena. Well, that's been a topic nationally. We've talked about this on the program before, but we're going to talk to State Senator Kirk Cullimore. He is the assistant whip in the state Senate. And I'm not going to give it away, but he has, ladies and gentlemen, he has cracked the code on what to do with businesses that want to start mandating medical procedures. This, you're gonna want to wait and hear what he has to say. He's got a bill file open. He's got an approach that I think is one of the most elegant solutions to this issue. Because I know some conservatives, I know some left of center liberals, and you know the stories are different, but the arguments tend to sometimes merge. And that is, you know, for the liberals, it's, hey, why would you ever stop anyone that's trying to promote health and wellness? They're doing it to help people. Hey, Hughes, you're a heartless guy. Stay out of the way. But conservatives and oftentimes libertarians are saying, hey, government, like in the case of Florida and Governor DeSantis, you should not mandate what a business should or should not do. And you should not say they cannot, they themselves, the businesses, require from employees or patrons that they be vaccinated. Well, we're going to take both of those sentiments and we're going to see what kind of bill could address both of those issues, health and wellness, safety, of employees and patrons, as well as where is it? What is the proper role of government? Should it be able to mandate? Should it be able to create scenarios where businesses don't have any legal liability at all? Well, what's the role of government right now in this era that we're in? And so we're gonna talk to our good State Senator Kirk Cullimore about that issue. And you're going to want to hear it because I love this bill. I think this bill is its time has arrived, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to have these are just a little bit. I actually have more. And we have the editor in chief of Red State. You know, this is a great online conservative publication. We're going to have Kira Davis on. She's got the greatest story about this LA Times reporter that was aghast that at these illegal border crossings in the middle of nowhere, there were not bathrooms. There were no showers. Can you believe, in the middle of nowhere where they were illegally crossing, We did not have plumbing, sewer, water, lights, electricity. There were no bathrooms in these areas where these illegal border crossings are occurring. And she, this reporter from the LA Times could not believe it. Well, as you can imagine, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about these type of reporters and what we can expect from our border and from places where there might be bathrooms and there might be electricity and sewer and water. And it might, I'm just going to tip my hat a little bit, it might be at what? Maybe a legal border crossing? Imagine that. So we're going to talk to Kira Davis about that. Again, editor-at-large at Red State. So we have, I don't know if you could tell, but we got a power-packed show for you. We're going to talk about these issues. We got a great guest coming on. You're listening to Talk
West. Okay.
From iHeartRadio, number one for music, radio, and podcasts all in one app.
iHeartRadio.
Give him a Red Bull and, well, there's trouble. Who knows what he'll say next? Guest hosting for Rod today, Greg Hughes.
Welcome back. It's the Citizen Hughes Show, filling in for the great Rod Arquette, taking some time off. Well-deserved. So it's kind of a world takeover. You know, I've told you before, man, every time I catch Rod wanting to get some time away, I just come in here, I go get the get a padlock, lock the place up. They can't get to me. I got the whole place to myself this Friday afternoon. As you finish your day and you're driving home or whatever you're doing today, we're gonna have a great discussion. We're going to do it together. I will tell you, I'm just sitting here, again, Friday reported. This isn't old news. This isn't, I mean, it's news that we've been talking about all week, but I'm just reading Kamala Harris, our vice president. Boy, she's really, really mad. There's consequences and accountability needed for Border Patrol on horses. She's saying this today, folks. You ever see these fact checkers? Do you remember during the campaign in 2020, if you had an opinion that was right of center, there was a fact checker that would say your opinion was in fact false. An opinion. Truly, you go back and you don't have to go back. Just look at these so-called fact checkers. It is the most loosey-goosey, ideologically driven endeavor you've ever seen. And it's done under this banner of being fact checkers. Well, if you wanted to fact check the idea, the notion that people were being whipped at the border or that there were whips that the Border Patrol agents had, or that their reins, these longer reins that they used to maneuver the horses in terrain as well as in potentially hostile situations, that those long reins were somehow inappropriate, something they shouldn't use. You heard Maxine Waters say it yesterday. It was worse than slavery, she said. She said it's worse than slavery. And the vice president today is quoted as saying it evoked slavery, that the images that they saw evoked slavery. Well, I mentioned this on Wednesday, but it's worth repeating. What about the family of 10 that we found out just within days, found out earlier this week in Kabul? There was a drone strike, a Reaper drone, sending a Hellfire missile to a van that was parked in a courtyard of a home. In an area that wasn't at the airport, but in proximity, it killed a family of 10, including 7 children. What was inside that van? The Pentagon at first called this a righteous strike. They said they followed it by the book. It was a righteous strike, and they made no apologies. Well, at least foreign correspondents are not buying what the Biden administration and the Pentagon are selling. And so the foreign correspondents went about investigating this and actually looking at video footage and everything else. Come to find out, this gentleman, this poor guy and his family, he was an engineer for an American NGO, a non-government organization, and he was bringing containers of water home because they had a water shortage. And this gentleman and tragically 7 of his children were killed by this drone attack. If we're seeing these images at the border of illegal crossings and we want to somehow demonize our Border Patrol and the horses, the poor horses, what'd they do to anybody? They're just banning horses now. Biden administration's mad at the horses as well. So they're telling them these horses can't be at the border. This selective logic? I'm going to keep talking about this. I'm going to keep calling out selective logic and selective outrage because as a parent, I'm going to tell you, we wouldn't let our kids rationalize opinions or what they want to do and use any rationalization that doesn't have to have any consistency to it whatsoever. We would teach our children different than that. We would say, look, you know, life's a two-way street. Okay. You give as good as you get. You can't change the rules just depending on what your preference is in that very moment. That's not mature. That's not growing up. You gotta do better than that. That's what we teach our kids, hopefully. But you watch this media. Okay. I said this weeks ago when this whole Afghanistan debacle was unfolding and this evacuation was failing miserably. It was not a peaceful evacuation at all, and then abandoning people, Americans, behind enemy lines, leaving them with the Taliban. Jets that had landed at the Kabul airport that were looking to help rescue people were forced to take off from that airport completely empty because there was no organizational structure to help get people out, Americans out. And everyone was saying, wow, finally the media is paying attention to this. Finally, they're calling out Biden and they're holding him accountable. And I had warned, I wanted to be wrong on this, but I'm not wrong on this. I said, the moment these American journalists are no longer on the ground in Afghanistan and Kabul, and the moment they are no longer shoulder to shoulder with the foreign correspondents from other nations of this world who are witnessing the same thing that our American news media outlets, our reporters were witnessing, when their reporting and their outrage was no longer within earshot of our American media, when they evacuated and everybody went home to their respective countries, you wouldn't hear about this anymore. They would move on. They would move on to things like images of these Border Patrol doing their job. A job, by the way, that is made so much harder when you have a Biden administration that has a open border policy. Now, you can have the head of the Department of Homeland Security say, no, hey, everyone, quit coming to our border. It is not open. We're going to send you back. You can't come here. You can pay the lip service, but the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people that are coming to that border, southern border, and making it across successfully, and as you've seen in Del Rio, 15,000 people were there, almost matching the population of that city, that Texas city itself, and now there's less than 3,000 there today, so within 3 days they've left. Where have most of them gone? Where are they? Some went back into Mexico. Some were deported. But you know where the lion's share are today, right now, this afternoon on a Friday? They're in the United States. They've been let right in with a promise to appear, with a promise. I promise. Tell me where you want me to be. Let me in, and I'll be there. Well, that's a policy that President Trump addressed, and because it was not being adhered to, and we tightened that up. And so we now have most of the people we saw, at least in that one location, that were illegally crossing, that are now not there. Many of them have actually successfully made it across, and that's not a secret. Do you think the people that want to come here and don't want to go through the legal path of coming to the United States aren't noticing that most of the people that were there are still here, and they've made it across with a promise to appear at a court hearing to decide whether they can stay or not? So we've got that hypocrisy going on at the border. But when you have this move the eyes, here's the shiny object, here are images from the border, we want you to look at this. Understand there are other things happening in this world that we should be paying attention to, we should be talking about, we should be asking the questions of all those immigrants that were Haitians that were allowed in with a promise to appear at an immigration court hearing. There's no vaccinations. There's not even the screening for COVID that's happened. And yet you have kids in masks at schools. You have in Utah now, we have businesses like our NBA arena now demanding that you have these vaccination cards to show to make sure that you're able to come into the arena. But when it comes to Del Rio and the illegal crossings and the illegal immigrants, they're just welcomed right in. And they don't apologize for it, so you know. Jen Psaki, you know, the press secretary, she said, well, you know, they're not here for a lengthy period of time. I'll bet you, ladies and gentlemen, it's longer than an NBA Jazz game. at Vivint Arena. I'll bet you it's longer than that they're here. So if you got to go to that game and you got to make sure you have your papers to get into the door, what in the world is she talking about when she says, well, they're not going to be here that long, so they don't have to be screened or vaccinated? Okay, that's great. That's the selective logic we're talking about. So we're going to go to a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk with the Heritage Foundation's Laura Riles, and we're going to talk about this
full and inspired life. Listen to the Good Risings podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Put me on a highway, the interstate, a dirt road to any place, long as I'm long gone. Chasing down some blue skies in my old truck.
Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Back to the Rod Arquette Show with today's guest host, Greg Hughes.
Welcome back and happy Friday. This is Greg Hughes, Citizen Hughes, your guest host for the Rod Arquette Show. Let's get to, this is an interview and a conversation I've been looking forward to as soon as the producer told me we had confirmed the interview. You know, the Heritage Foundation has been around a long time. It's a powerful think tank. We got the big brains in this country staring at the hardest issues and coming up with white papers and policy positions and actual accurate commentary in terms of what's going on around us in this country and world. And we have on the program with us today Laura Riles, the director of the Center for Technology Policy, Senior Research Fellow, Homeland Security. Laura, thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me on.
So here's the thing, the border. I would argue that we don't have a southern border at the moment. When you see the chaos that's going on, to say it would be porous would be generous. You've gone a step further. You've called this not a border crisis, but a constitutional crisis, which I know you don't take lightly. So maybe describe what is the constitutional crisis that is actually a more dire concern or a greater concern than the border crisis?
Well, you have a combination of the Congress is responsible for passing, enacting, and overseeing and funding federal immigration laws, and the executive branch is responsible for executing those laws consistent with the laws that Congress makes. And this executive branch is not upholding the law. They are flouting it in multiple ways. The president is not upholding his oath to defend the Constitution or to protect Americans. The southern border is wide open. We have known and suspected terrorists who have crossed that border. And now with the fall of Afghanistan and the revitalization of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the Taliban, they clearly have their eyes set on that wide open path of the southern border. So we have a national security risk on our hands, as well as a public health risk. The administration is being completely inconsistent about how they are approaching COVID with respect to different travelers, different modes of transportation coming here. And Congress is looking to defund ICE, to erase the line between legal and illegal immigration. And so the result is we don't have a orderly or safe immigration system any longer.
You know, your colleague Mike Howell was on I watched a YouTube interview, and he said something that struck me, and I wrote it down. I actually had to rewind it and write it down. He said that this administration, where our Constitution would never imagine that a president would ignore or not defend the Constitution, uphold our U.S. Constitution. He said that the Biden administration has ceded our territorial integrity. So, ceded our territorial integrity. That sounds like to me, Laura, that across this area, there's like 220. Miles plus of area that in this one where they're trying to process the Haitians that are coming across, that whole 200 plus mile area is left unguarded, unpatrolled. They're processing the illegal crossings and the people into our country. When we talk about losing that or ceding our territorial integrity, it's not that the cartels are going to discover this and take full advantage of it. Isn't it the case that this was probably happening in real time right now in terms of unprecedented cartel movement of drugs and human beings and everything else?
Absolutely. The volume of fentanyl alone captured by the Border Patrol and Texas police has been historic this year. Last year in 2020, the American deaths from drug overdose rose to historic numbers, to over 90,000. And so, yes, you're right. There were over 200 miles of the Texas border completely unmanned this past week because the Border Patrol had to shift resources to Del Rio, where thousands of illegal aliens were entering easily. Their numbers rose very quickly. And fortunately, there were just a few journalists down there who were recording it and showing America what was happening. It made quite a headache for the White House. They wanted it to just go away. And so, unfortunately, they have created a complete lie about their own agents, claiming that they acted inhumanely and in a racist manner against these migrants, using whips and reins, and they're doubling down on it. Even today, the president said that these agents will pay.
It's so sad. I mean, to think that these agents are so, this isn't the job they signed up for. They're doing their level best to do their duty, and to be attacked from the executive branch, from the president, from Vice President Kamala Harris had some terrible things that she said today. Who would blame them if they just gave up and didn't want to do it? Now they've even taken the horses away, as if the horses are the bad guys. You can't have horses out there anymore. You can't have a wall. You can't have any enforcement of the border. You can't have the horses. Let me ask you this. You know, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas, he does make a point when he gets on at least American television and says, hey, to all those that want to come to the border, this border is closed. It is closed for business. Do not come here. And at the same time he's saying that, we're seeing what you've described, this unprecedented thousands upon thousands that are coming to the border. How are these messages getting crossed? How do the people know that when they say this border is closed, if by closed you mean wide open, how do they know? I mean, how are they getting away with this? I just imagine people watching the Secretary of Homeland Security saying that, saying, well, you know, they're telling them not to come, but, you know, they're not listening.
Well, it's a couple things. One, the smugglers, and two, family members and friends. People get in. This administration, while they're paying lip service and saying borders closed, don't come, at the same time, they are very quickly processing them in and transporting them all over the U.S. And so when those aliens resettle somewhere, they call, you know, their home country and say, hey, I got in, you know, come on up. And so word spreads. And we have seen foreign nationals from over 146 countries, that's three quarters of the globe, come through that border just since the Biden administration has been in place.
We're speaking with the Heritage Foundation. We're talking with Laura. You are on this. You've been the important coverage in the policy positions and papers that you put out help us as we try to sort through this. This is what I need to know, because you're the big brain. You know this issue better than most. Where is this going to go? What do we have to see? When what is the line here? And when we see this happening, and we've seen this accumulation over 8 months, and we're in some of it culminating into the scenes in Del Rio, where is this going to go in the trajectory that we've been in this year of 2021?
Well, we've had 9 months of this now, so there seems to be no limit to what this administration and the left want to pursue in terms of the numbers of aliens who come here illegally. And so because of that, my fear is it's going to take another terrorist attack, or it's going to take high-profile American deaths from drug overdose that somehow they can pinpoint back to that open border. It's not a question of if, it's a matter of when.
I couldn't agree more. We had in Utah, we have this Interstate 15, which before any of this madness had been this way in this year, was already a massive corridor for illegal drugs. And it was, as a former public servant, it's something we had to stare at all the time with cartels that were using our interstate and our state for drug trafficking and human trafficking. And so you're right. I think it's a matter of time where we're in the event, and this is going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Laura, thank you. I'm coming up on a break. Thank you so much for joining us on the program, and keep up the good work. We need you, and we appreciate you.
Thanks, Greg, for having me on.
Thank you. Okay, well, can we come back from
only equipment, taxes and fees extra, and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply. Subscription required to access streaming services.
Look out! He may start waving the terrible towel. Guest hosting for Rod today, Greg Hughes.
Welcome back. It's the Citizen Hughes Show, filling in for the great Rod Arquette. He's taking some time off. Long weekend for Rod. He deserves it. So I'm taking over. I hope you're enjoying your Friday afternoon coming into the weekend. I am. Got a lot to get off my chest. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a lot to talk about. We're coming up at the top of the hour. When we come back after the break, we are going to have a discussion with our state Senate president, Stuart Adams. He's been in the news lately because we have, as we've seen nationally playing out, and I've seen this in Florida as well, monoclonal antibodies treatment. I think it's a mouthful. But there are treatments out there that if you catch COVID at an early stage and you were to get the monoclonal antibodies treatment, you will not find yourself taking these hospital beds or finding yourself in the ICU unit and using those beds at a rate of well over 50%. So this has efficacy. This has been tested. IHC, University of Utah Hospital, they've been using this. So the bottom line question for the Senate president, because he's a leader in the legislature, but a leader in the state, is do Utahns understand that of all the precautions, of all the things that you can do, this treatment is available? And if people don't know, the big question is, why don't they? And so he wants to make sure that people are aware of the options. If you find yourself with symptoms and you've tested positive for COVID, there are active treatments going on right now that show that they work. And he wants to make sure that that's part of the arrows, and that's one of the arrows in our quiver as we deal with this. They've painted him as a crazy, as an anti-vaxxer, as this and that. They got all these terrible narratives for him because he had the gall to tell you that there's some treatments out there that really, really work. And I don't understand why the hospitals aren't celebrating this as well. Instead, they're defensive and they're saying, "Well, that's not that. We don't want to tell people about it because then they won't get vaccinated." There's just this contempt for people, or this disbelief that people can actually weigh information on their own and make decisions that they need to make that are the best for them. Personal health decisions. Imagine that. So we're going to talk to him when we come back. I'm telling you, he is a soldier for the cause, and he has been painted, in my opinion, this is just me talking, but I think he's been painted very unfairly in terms of trying to get the word out on treatments like this. And we'll get the real deal from President Adams when we come back after this break. So you're not going to want to miss that interview. We got that and a lot more coming this Friday afternoon.
Experience the power of community oncology at Utah Cancer Specialists. Find your personal oncologist at utahcancer.com.
I see trouble coming, man. Left jab, right hook. Yeah, he's ready to deliver the next body blow. Guest hosting for Rod Arquette today, Greg Hughes.
Welcome back. It's the Citizen Hughes Show. Your guest host, Greg Hughes, filling in for the great Rod Arquette, taking a well-deserved vacation, long weekend for Rod. I saw him leave yesterday, and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to go take over his studio. I'm just going to go ahead and hijack this place, and we're going to have ourselves a Citizen Hughes Show. So, you know, those Wednesday segments I get, they're just not long enough. We got too much to talk about. So I love it when Rod's not watching, he's going away, and I'm just going to come in here and take over the show. So we have, as a guest coming on the program right now, one of our great leaders in the state of Utah. He is our state Senate President, Stuart Adams. I've known President Adams for a long time. We both entered the State House of Representatives back in 2002. I have watched his leadership in the state of Utah for almost 20 years now. So it's been It's a good friendship, and he has been, in my opinion, now I'm allowed to have one, I think that they have that he has been unfairly treated in the media. I think there's a story here in the Deseret News. And I'm going to, when this interview's over, if I have time, I'm going to break down this just formulaic hit job that Lisa Riley Roach from the Deseret News likes to do to anybody. I've been a victim of it. She likes to create a premise, then ask political science professors to confirm her bias and everything else. So it's been talked about that President Adams and talking about treatments like this monoclonal antibodies treatment. It's if I'm saying it right, that this somehow makes him anti-vaccine and everything else. I have heard President Adams share statistics about hospitalizations versus those vaccinated and those that have not been vaccinated. He has encouraged people to be vaccinated. But this is a person that's the last man on earth that will ever tell you that government is going to dictate what you do. You are going to get good information and make that will drive good decisions. But he wants all those decisions on the table. So let me get to our great guest, President Adams. Welcome to the Citizen Hughes Show, sir.
Hey, always great to be with you. You're a great friend, and I'm excited to spend a couple of minutes with you on the radio. So, and you're right, former Speaker Greg Hughes. Vaccinate. I pushed vaccination before I think almost anybody even knew they were coming back when President Trump had warp speed going on. We were trying to get them to Utah. We were aware that working with all the providers and the delivery people, they were buying dry ice machines. We were working with the Department of Health. We were anxious to have them here. We pushed them out in December last year. And after they came out, we realized there was a greater need to expand them beyond just the healthcare workers. Remember, the healthcare workers were getting them. And we knew that 78.5% of the fatalities were those over 70. I actually wrote a letter last January to the governor, the speaker, and the health department director, asked them to get the vaccines to those over 70. The governor responded immediately, and that Friday we started vaccinating those over 70. You saw the fatalities go down. It's a really amazing, and I'll talk about monoclonal antibodies, but I can't imagine anybody who's followed me at all, looked at my Facebook pages, or looked at anything that I've done, believes that I'm not pro-vaccination.
We're speaking with the Senate President, Stuart Adams. I listened to that, President, and it is sad that you have to kind of put that stake in the ground and make that the premise from where we can then start to talk about treatments. But the reason that you do, and I'll tell the listeners because you're too gracious to say it yourself, is we live in a climate right now where I would argue that the elite, if you talk about treatments and think efficacious treatments, whether they be monoclonal antibodies, whether it be vitamin D3, health and wellness, if you talk about anything but vaccination, you're a kook. You're kooky. And there's something wrong with you, and you want to hurt people, and you don't want people to be vaccinated. These broad brush attacks have come to leaders who have been pointing to the public. All these alternatives, all these options that we have to take care of ourselves and to get through this this COVID-19 pandemic. So tell us about this treatment, because your basic point before you had to explain that this doesn't make you a kook, like the people, like anybody that talks about good treatments, efficacious treatments, are being accused of being. Tell us about this treatment and why don't people? If I can't say the words without second guessing myself, it means we don't know enough about it. Why don't we know about this treatment of monoclonal antibodies?
Greg, in the first of this month, in September, I became aware of monoclonal antibodies. So I went to my trusted source, Google, and I Googled monoclonal antibodies. And you know what I found? Monoclonal antibodies, Utah. Google it. And I found an IHC study, and Intermountain Healthcare did a study. They led the nation in studying monoclonal antibodies. They did a press release on August 7th, and they talked about how successful the monoclonal antibody treatments were. They said that they were provided free by the federal government. There's an unlimited supply. And I thought, man, that's a great thing, but I couldn't figure out why for 30 days no one had told the Senate president about monoclonal antibodies. So I started asking questions. And, I'm very excited. The Department of Health just set up they've worked very, very hard to set up a high-volume monoclonal antibody station up in Murray, and IHC has been very involved with it. But the more I talked about monoclonal antibodies, the more pushback I was giving. And when I talked to people about it, this is a very interesting statistic. There have been 14,000 breakthrough cases. That means people that have been vaccinated that have gotten COVID in Utah. 800 of those have been hospitalized. We've had 80 fatalities. And I was talking to some of my friends in the healthcare industry who had been vaccinated and then gotten COVID. They were one of the breakthrough cases. And they started telling me after I started talking about monoclonal antibodies that they had them. And we've been giving them in Utah for a long time. In fact, I think for over a year, but not in the volume needed. So I'm hearing that my healthcare friends are getting them, but not everyone's getting them. And that's why we need to open up these high volume sites, because if anybody wants them, the IHC's found that they work, they're very effective, and we need to make them available to the public.
President Adams, you threw some, I think, some stunning statistics out there that I've never heard before, and I think they're worth repeating if I got them right. I think you said that there have been documented in the state of Utah, not nationally or regionally, but in the state of Utah, 14,000 breakthrough cases, people that have been fully vaccinated and caught COVID-19. Was that number right?
That's right.
800 were hospitalized of the 14,000?
Yes.
And how many deaths?
80 fatalities. I have a 95-year-old mom who has been vaccinated, and if she gets COVID, I want her to have monoclonal antibodies.
It begs the question, if the, you know, the university political science professors think that it's dangerous to tell people about this treatment because they might not have the good sense to make decisions about their own health, whether to be vaccinated or not, so we can't tell them about these treatments because we don't think that they're competent enough to make good health decisions. If you're getting that very sentiment from doctors, there's a doctor quoted in this recent article that said, well, the danger in telling people about these important treatments is they might not get vaccinated, or they might not do something else that we want them to do. If you have the breakthrough cases, the things that that they are saying they want people to do, and you have numbers at the volume you're talking about, 80 deaths. I mean, that's got to be since the variant hit. How in the world can they justify not sharing more broadly the treatments that work when there are so many cases where there's so many examples of breakthrough cases? 14,000 is not a small number in a short amount of time.
You know, Greg, I just don't buy that people won't get vaccinated if you tell them the truth, if you tell them what's honestly happening. You know, we have in the state of Utah 90% of those over 65 vaccinated. Why? I mean, they're not the most progressive people. They're surely perhaps not the most number of people on Facebook. But you know why they're vaccinated? Because we told them the truth. The truth is that 78.5% of those over 65 were those that were dying. Almost 80% of the fatalities were those over 65. What'd they do? They went out and got vaccinated. And when you tell people the truth, whether they're conservative or liberal or whatever they are, they go get vaccinated. And if we tell people the truth, they're going to get vaccinated whether they know about monoclonal antibodies or whether they don't, because monoclonal antibodies, it isn't a solution. It's only for those that have those that are medically frail, those that can have a high probability of going to the hospital, and you need to be screened, and there's processes, and all of those criteria are on the Department of Health's Facebook page. But you need to be able to go through that process. But the people ought to know about it. Lives have been saved because monoclonal antibodies, and we just aren't telling the public about it, and I think that's wrong.
We're speaking with Senate President Stuart Adams, talking about monoclonal antibodies, right? It just rolls off your tongue, so I know you know all about this treatment because you say it so easily, but we're speaking with you. President, we are coming up on a break. I'm wondering, do you have time to hang on? I know you're a busy, busy man. Do you have time to hang on to the break and continue this discussion? But if you can't, you got to kick me to the curb. I understand too.
Yeah, this is something that's saving lives. I'm going to hang on with you. I'm passionate about this. I'm happy to stay with you.
Thank you so much, because I have some questions, and I really think we ought to dig into this because this is something that people just simply aren't getting the good information about. You're listening. So we're going to be back with
Full and inspired life. Listen to the Good Risings podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Left jab, right hook. Guest hosting for Rod today is frustrated boxer Greg Hughes.
Yeah. Welcome back. Happy Friday. It's Friday afternoon. It's the Citizen Hughes Show, filling in for the great Rod Arquette. Rod Arquette Show. He's taking a well-deserved long weekend. And so I've come in here, kind of worked my way into the station and grabbed this microphone. And so we're having a great afternoon talking about things you're not hearing in the mainstream media, or if you're hearing about it, they're putting a very negative narrative to it. We have, continuing our discussion over the break, we have with us Senate President Stuart Adams, who's been a stalwart and a leader in providing information to Utahns about what we can do with COVID-19 in terms of not just the vaccination or masks, but also treatments that are out there that help people that have it. President Adams, thank you for holding over the break. Now, I did what you said. You said Google this thing and see what you see. See what you find out. Well, monoclonal antibodies, it says that one of the important parts, one of the important aspects is it has to be a treatment that you receive early on when you get COVID. And if you do that, then the risk of hospitalization or even worse, an ICU bed goes down dramatically. So my question to you, President, and you're privy to this information as a presiding officer of a legislative body. You have direct conduits of communication with our Department of Health. What is the status of our hospital beds right now? I think I know the answer, but I'm asking because maybe we're fine now and there's plenty of capacity, so the worry of hospital bed overutilization or crowding isn't a concern. What do you know right now about Utah's situation with hospital beds?
You know, Greg, it's well reported that we're actually slowing down elective surgery because our hospital beds, especially the ICU, are at capacity. And that's why when I read the IHC study, that was one of the big things in the IHC study that popped out at me. When they studied monoclonal antibodies, they said it reduced hospitalizations and reduced fatalities. Go look at our fatality numbers. And we can afford to reduce those fatality numbers, and it reduces hospitalizations. It is, I think, irresponsible for our hospital workers. It's treating them poorly if we don't try to use monoclonal antibodies to reduce their load inside the hospitals. I mean, I can't imagine why anybody wouldn't want to do that. When you think of the load our hospital workers and those that have worked so hard to keep those people safe with COVID, to be able to reduce the number of people in the hospitals. It's one of the things that I was just unbelievably impressed with and shocked that wasn't more talked about.
So it begs a question because you shared in the before the break, you shared some, staggering statistics, 14,000 breakthrough cases. Now, this is what I know about COVID, okay? After we're all in this global clinical trial, living all this in real time together. Many people will be asymptomatic. Many people will have COVID or will test positive for COVID, but will never find out. The TV show, The View, right before they had Vice President Kamala Harris come on the program, they did by standard security protocol, they've tested the hosts of that show. Two of the hosts of The View came out positive for COVID. They had no idea. So the idea that if you have fully vaccinated people, and you know, and we're aware in the state of Utah, there are 14,000 breakthrough cases, and there have been 800 hospitalizations. How is it not the case that our healthcare infrastructure, our hospitals, aren't advertising this everywhere strongly, not just President Adams, not just you taking this on and trying to get this information out? What answer have you been given as to why the hospitals are not promoting this so strongly? To even 800 hospital beds is a big number. And we're talking about what we are here, and that's the breakthrough cases that needed hospital beds. Why aren't they doing this to save their beds? Do they have an answer for you?
Greg, when I heard about this, again, I was working with the Department of Health, so grateful for Nate Cechas for standing up this monoclonal antibody high-volume site in Murray. But I actually went out and talked to the health department director in Davis County, Brian Hatch, and asked him why we weren't using it. And he wasn't that familiar with it. He researched it and called me back and said, hey, I think this works. And I went out and talked to one of the hospitals that I thought, well, asked them why they weren't using it. They said, well, they are applying monoclonal antibodies, and they are giving it to some people, but they don't have the ability to decide who qualifies for it. And then they said a lot of the medical providers, and this was stunning to me as I was talking to the hospitals, at least in Davis County, they're saying some of the doctors don't even know about monoclonal antibodies, that it's a treatment for COVID. So they aren't referring people to their center. So they said that we need to have more people aware of it. So what I did is the health department can't actually administer the monoclonal antibodies. The hospitals don't know who to go get. So I actually connected Brian Hatch, the health department director in Davis County, with the hospitals in Davis County, and they're setting up a high-volume monoclonal antibodies treatment centers. They'll set those up on Monday. And so part of it's just lack of knowledge. It just is stunning to me that this type of treatment could be out there and not very many people know about it.
Well, that's why I appreciate this, the extra time that you're taking so that we can discuss this on the program. I'm going to give you there's two quotes, and then if you could just explain to listeners if they feel like they have symptoms or if they've tested positive for COVID, whether it's a breakthrough case or not, what they should do or what they could expect in terms of trying to get treatment like this. But let me just say this. You have in a recent article, and I'll just say it's the Deseret News. It's just a terrible article. And when you get off this interview, I've got a lot to say about that, but I won't waste your time with that commentary. But I'll say this. I got a university political science professor in here saying, you know, he worries this, and you can just hear the oozing arrogance out of these professors saying he worries that people will mistake the treatment for the vaccine and they won't know the difference. So they'll think that it's one or the other. So we really can't really emphasize the treatments because it will just confuse people. But then later in the article, you have a physician from Intermountain Healthcare that provides this treatment that says there's a very real risk that it's a disincentive for people to be vaccinated. So they don't want to say anything. I guess what I'm saying is, do you think it's a coordinated effort to keep this treatment quiet and with the hopes that people don't know about it?
I'm just going to say that I believe that we shouldn't hide a treatment to leverage somebody to get vaccinated. I believe people that are going to get vaccinated are going to get vaccinated. Many people have made that choice already. And to hide a treatment, we wouldn't do that with any other virus or disease. We surely wouldn't do it with flu. To hide a treatment to try to leverage people to get vaccinated, I believe is wrong.
Yeah, it's even wrong and inhumane. It's got to be against the Hippocratic Oath to withhold efficacious treatments that can help people and prevent hospitalization at such a high percentage, and it makes sense. Can you tell us how it would work? Let's say someone starts feeling some symptoms and they get tested. There's a lot of mobile sites where they can get tested to have it. What's the window, President, if you know? And what would be the process of being able to qualify or to receive this treatment?
Yeah, it's really important we talk about that because I don't think most people know, your viewers or the listeners at least won't know how it affects them or if they qualify or not. So it's really important that someone who gets COVID get tested early, because if you don't get this treatment within 5 to 7 days and surely before you start having respiratory problems, it won't work. So you have to get it early. And the federal government now is actually allocating it. So it used to be we had plenty of monoclonal antibodies. Now we have a restricted amount. So it needs to be given to those that are most susceptible and those that are medically frail. And so if you get it, go to your medical provider. They'll assess your condition, or call the Department of Health, and hopefully a contact tracer is already talking to you about your medical condition, or go to the website that the Department of Health has put forward, and you'll see the list of conditions that qualify you for monoclonal antibodies. And if you have any of those conditions, diabetes, respiratory issues, you're over 65, all those things would help qualify you to have these. If you have those, sign up, and hopefully either a hospital or one of these high-volume sites, you'll be able to register for and actually get in to get these treatments.
President Adams, we're speaking with President Adams, President of the State Senate. I want to thank you for joining us on the program. Taking 30 minutes of your time is a big deal, but I believe that listeners need to hear what you're sharing and really hear the truth about what's going on here. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for what you're doing. And you heard it, folks. If you're in one of those risk categories, you have some options, and you need to take advantage of them. Thank you again, President, for joining us on the program.
Thank you. Remember, vaccinate. And monoclonal antibodies if you get COVID.
There you have it. So when we come back, we're going to hear from Kira Davis. She's the editor-at-large at Red State. It's a great online publication, but there's a great, great article that I cannot...
An inspired life. Listen to the Good Risings podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One man, one goal.
The Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. He's used to herding cats. I mean, lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Guest hosting for Rod Arquette today, Greg Hughes.
And we're back. Happy Friday, Friday afternoon. Weekend's on its way. My name is Greg Hughes. This is the Citizen Hughes Show. Filling in for guest hosting for Rod Arquette. And we just finished an interview with Senate President Stuart Adams. And I've been a public servant, and I have served in our state legislature. And this is a part-time job. It's not a full-time job. The framers of our state constitution wanted people to serve in the legislature that had a connection to and basically a day job, something that they were doing that they would walk away and spend some time in a small general session of 45 calendar days, but then meetings during the interim months between the sessions. But it was designed to be a part-time legislature so that perspective of the everyday person and what we experience is not lost, and that lawmakers don't become insular in the decisions that they make, which you can kind of see when you look at the swamp, what happens when you lose touch with everyday people. So I can tell you that I think that our Utah Constitution and our legislative branch is amazing in how it keeps our legislative branch connected to the everyday people. So you have a Senate president who's saying, look, there's treatments out there. They work. They reduce hospitalization when detected early. And he can't for the life of him figure out why the hospitals, healthcare systems, the media are not promoting this more broadly so that we can reduce hospitalizations, that we can help people. And he shared some staggering numbers, and I'm going to, because people kind of tune in and out of the program during the afternoon. These are staggering numbers, recorded, documented in the state of Utah. And these are the ones that they know of, are 14,000 breakthrough cases of COVID. Those are people that had COVID, those are people that have had the vaccination, been fully vaccinated, one or the two shots or the one shot for the fancy vaccination. Of the 14,800 hospitalizations, you just heard in the news break, Abby Bonnell, our great news producer here, news director, talking about a capacity of 97%. Hospital beds are not aplenty. So you have 800 hospitalizations from breakthrough fully vaccinated people. You have those breakthrough cases. And we have had, sadly, 80 deaths from those that had been fully vaccinated. So it just absolutely begs the question that if you're worried, and it's in this article, and this is what I wanted to say before we bring on Kara Davis. We're waiting for her to call in. Producer's giving me the bad news. He said, and he doesn't think so. He's looking a little skeptical. And I'm going to talk about her article anyway if she doesn't call in, because it's phenomenal. She kind of talks about the LA Times and their reporter in ways he needs to be called out. But let me just say this. We have our own version of the LA Times in this state, sadly. When you have medical professionals saying, we don't want to tell people about this treatment because, hey, they might not get vaccinated if they know this treatment's out there. And we just don't trust them. We don't think they're competent enough, the people, the public at large, to make these decisions. So we can't give that option out there. We can't put it out there. You have political science professors, like they know a thing about medical medicine or the delivery of medicine, saying that, no, it could really cause people to abandon any idea of being vaccinated or any of that, because there's this treatment available out there that could help and prevent hospitalization. Well, there's a thing called, you know, the bigotry of low expectations. We have a media now, and we have what I would argue the ruling class, people that think they're smarter than you. There's a club out there, folks, and you and I aren't invited to that club, okay? And it's the people that think they're just special. They're smarter. They know how to run your life better than you do. And they're not going to leave these decisions. They do not believe in the principle of good information drives good decisions. They don't believe it. They think they have to mandate it. They have to keep information from you because they don't want you to be confused by the information that you hear. And I'll tell you, Lisa Riley Roche from Deseret News, this is her part and parcel. This is what she does. I'm just going to give you the formula for every article she's ever written, and she's written them about me. First, she comes up with a narrative that is always going to be unflattering to the subject in which she is talking or speaking to. In this case, it was President Adams, and many times it was good old me. Okay, she leads in this article about President Adams talking about Trump. Now, this is the treatment that President Trump took when he had COVID, and she doesn't say that in a complimentary way. There is an editorial tone to the way that article starts. Every time she starts a narrative like this, she immediately then goes to some university poli-sci political science professor, and she asks these questions. Could it be the case that politicians or lawmakers are ... whatever the premise is that she's trying to promote? And that I would read these political science professors and what they were saying about me and what I was doing and why I was doing it, and I just had to laugh. I would read these articles and think, what in the world? You're asking someone who doesn't know any of us or any context of the decisions being made, and they get to opine about what is really in the minds of lawmakers when they're making these decisions or whatever Lisa Riley Roche wants to promote. And then she goes on, and if she can find someone else to confirm her bias in an interview, and this article, it's another doctor who, again, has no faith that the public could decide between treatments and vaccinations, and they're going to confuse them all, so don't tell them about it. Really says this in the article. It confirms the bias. It confirms her narrative. And there is a story. And I'm telling you, it is a carbon copy. That is how she writes. Those are the parts of every article she's ever written. And it just gets old. It's too bad it happens. But that's why I'm here, because I'm going to call it out. I'm going to give you the inside baseball, combine it with the outside baseball, so you know what's happening out there in real life. Look, I'm going to come to a break. We're coming as these segments go too fast. I want to talk about this article, this New York Times reporter. It deserves some attention from us on this program. So when we come back, we will talk about this article that came out and some of the narration around it.
Check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Here's to seeing you soon, skeptical.
Back to the Rod Arquette Show with today's guest host, Greg Hughes.
We are back. It is the Citizen Hughes Show. That's what I call it, because that's what I do when I take over a radio program. The Rod Arquette Show will return as planned on Monday, but as for now, it's the Citizen Hughes Show. So look, we've been talking about a couple things. We've been talking about the chaos at the border, which the Heritage Foundation calls a constitutional crisis. Accurately, we heard from we had a great interview related to that. We've been talking about I ceded our territorial integrity is what was how that's been described that the Biden administration has done to our southern border. It's not porous. It's not. It's not having problems. It doesn't exist. It really. It's sad to say, but it's the absolute truth. We then shifted on to, it's kind of the issues are connected. We talk about COVID. All of those people, those 15, 16,000 migrants who had illegally crossed and were at Del Rio in Texas, Haitian migrants, it's less than 3,000 right now and 15,000 3 days ago. Most of those have been relocated within the United States with a promise to appear to an immigration hearing. Those work. Those pinky swears are just great. I mean, just I promise, pinky swear, I'll come back. That's a great process. But The Biden administration proudly declares, I mean, they're not even embarrassed about it. No, there's no vaccinations. There's no screening of the people that are coming in at all. So we ask the question out loud, if we're not screening the thousands upon thousands of people that are coming across, is it a health crisis? Is it urgent? Well, as soon as you talk about you and me, you talk about the everyday guy, it absolutely is. So we're going to keep talking about this. We've got an important interview coming with Sheriff.
Beauty with Century 21 Everest Group right now. JustinUD.com for the number. That's JustinUDY.com.
Left jab, right hook. Yeah, he's ready to deliver the next body blow. Guest hosting for Ron Arquette today, Greg Hughes.
Welcome back. This is Greg Hughes. You're listening to the Citizen Hughes Show. The Ron Arquette Show will join. We'll come back at same time, same bat channel on Monday. But until then, I'm your guest host. We have on the phone with us someone that I quite admire. Let me, before I get him on the air, and this is like, I know my friends that listen and people are rolling their eyes up. You put a nickel in Hughes, you get a quarter's worth of talk. I know. But I need to draw a distinction with listeners. We have the smartest listening radio audience in the world, easily. But I need to draw a distinction here when we talk about law enforcement, because we're going to speak with one of our duly elected sheriffs, Kane County Sheriff Tracy Glover. But before I have him on, I just want to point out the difference between a duly elected county sheriff, and we have 29 counties in Utah, we have 29 duly elected county sheriffs, so it's not all rural. But the difference between your county sheriff and a police chief is that a police chief is the chief of a police department in a political subdivision, a municipality, and they are typically hired by a city manager, or a mayor, or city council, or some combination. And what happens is that we see this in Salt Lake City all the time, sadly. The politics of the politicians that really have no touch on law enforcement or any kind of deep understanding of it, their politics bleed. And we see it not just in Salt Lake City, by the way. You see this nationally. And we've certainly saw this in 2020 play out. The politics of these jurisdictions play out and color, and not a good way, the ability of law enforcement to do their job. Well, in America and in Utah, your sheriffs are accountable to you, the people, directly. And that gives them a moral authority. They are sworn public servants who have sworn to defend our state constitution and the Constitution of the United States, and they enforce it. They enforce the laws. So these are, I would say, in the times that we are in, there is no better voice to hear from than our county sheriffs. And so with that introduction, I want to introduce and I want to welcome to the program Kane County Sheriff Tracy Glover. Sheriff Glover, thank you for joining us on the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Greg.
So I you were good enough to answer my call today. I called you because we have this big hubbubaloo, a lot of Easterners, a lot of media people that are making a big deal about horses, about the Border Patrol agents that are riding these horses along the southern border, trying their level best to maintain the rule of law, trying to do their jobs. They have a lot of ground to cover. The horses have been part of the Border Patrol unit for as long as anyone can remember, and this has been a practice that has been used every day to apprehend those that try to illegally cross our borders. Well, it was announced by the Biden administration that they are going to discontinue the use of horses at the border. This has caused a lot of there's a lot of upset agents who Border Patrol agents who feel overworked already, and the odds are against them; they're outnumbered. This doesn't help matters. Well, you're a sheriff in a rural county, and you're not a stranger to horses. I think even your reputation is that you were a horse guy before you were a law enforcement guy. So you know the relationship between law enforcement, between horses. For our listeners who might not, and even me, where I'm not as steeped in this, can you bring some sense to what we're seeing? We see images. We were told they were whips. They're not whips. We were told they were going after immigrants in some cruel way akin to slavery. But you have these Border Patrol agents that are saying this is being misrepresented. Sheriff, what say you?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I've been a horse owner my entire life. I was riding horses from the time I was a little kid and with my grandfather and my father and my brothers. And I'm a horse owner today. And when I see the video and the pictures that are being depicted on the media and the way it's taken out of context, it makes me sad, really. Most horse training techniques basically employ a technique that you apply a certain amount of pressure to a horse, and if they do what you're asking them to do, the reward is that you let the pressure off. And horses are very intelligent animals; they pick up on things really quickly. And what you notice if you watch closely about a rider, such as the rider in the videos that you're talking about, he's a pretty talented rider, actually, probably a pretty talented horseman. And he's getting that horse to move to pressure. What you don't see is that he's applying leg pressure to get the horse to move sideways, for example, or to move on its back legs and kind of whirl on its back legs, or to move its front end as opposed to its back end. And as that horse is feeling some intensity of the situation, the rider applies a little bit more pressure. And at one point he kind of swings his reins up by towards the side of the neck of the horse, and the horse sees those reins and immediately reacts to that additional piece of pressure. And my analysis of that video is at no time was that rider swinging those reins at a person, but rather applying pressure to that horse to get that horse to do exactly what he needed him to do. And so it's unfortunate to see that taken out of context. I believe the Border Patrol agents are the victim of an administration reacting to media pressure, and in law enforcement, unfortunately, that's what we see all too often.
We're speaking with Kane County Sheriff Tracy Glover. Sheriff, this isn't an equestrian event, okay? This isn't this isn't a tame moment. I mean, even the role of Border Patrol agents and the horses. If there's anything, there's also the fear that the horse, I would imagine, that they could. The people that are attempting the illegal crossings could be trampled by the horses. If you're not using it to deter them or try to keep them from trying to cross illegally, but you also don't want to harm the people that are trying to illegally cross. So it would seem to me, and again, I'm probably as naive to all this as the media. I just don't lie about it. I just don't take what I see and think it's the gospel truth because I don't know any better. I know there are people like you, Sheriff, out there that know the difference. But, you know, critical thinking of anyone, rural, urban, whatever, they would imagine that there is that risk, that the horse, it's a dangerous animal if it were to trample someone. Do you see any of that happening in these images or videos? Is there that caution being taken? Because that's even injury, that's just an insult to injury if they're trying to keep people safe and at the same time they're being accused of harming these Haitian migrants.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the optic of sort of herding people with horses is what's being scrutinized here. And that's really a policy debate. I don't believe that the Border Patrol agents that were engaged in this were in any way attempting to hurt anyone or that there was even much risk of that. I think their horses are under pretty good command by the riders. And they're definitely moving kind of fast, as opposed to, like, if you watch the New York City riot control police, mounted police, they're very slow and methodical with big draft horses, a little bit different technique. But I believe they were in command. I don't believe that there was a lot of risk. Everything we do in law enforcement comes with some risk, and we try to mitigate those risks as much as we can. But at the end of the day, horses are just a law enforcement tool. It's no different than a canine unit or an ATV, for that matter, or a helicopter. It's just a law enforcement tool, and it serves a purpose. It's not great for every purpose, but it does serve a purpose. And certainly with the Border Patrol, just last month I rode into the Bob Marshall Wilderness area in Montana with a couple of U.S. Forest Service rangers and a group of sheriffs. And we rode into the wilderness area several miles on horses. And I learned a little bit about what the Forest Service does with their mounted rangers that are able to access backcountry, take care of problems, and do things that they would not otherwise be able to do without those resources and the tool of the horse and the mules that they use to pack in there. So it's unfortunate that we kind of take to starting to blame this tool as part of the problem. It is really, honestly, just a tool. It's just transportation. And certainly you can have a policy debate on exactly how you want to use that tool or employ that tool in an actual law enforcement event. And those are discussions that should be had as a matter of public policy. But to scrutinize something like this out of context and indicate that this person was trying to whip someone or something like that and that it was some racially motivated event is just terribly unfortunate. It's taken our discussion in the wrong direction.
It really does. It feels like it's just part of the playbook sometimes that if it demeans or if it undermines our law enforcement, be it Border Patrol or sheriffs or any member of law enforcement, that it's trying to uphold the rule of law. If it can undermine that and you can throw an accusation of racism, well, that's the playbook, it feels like, as of late. Let me ask you this, because you brought up a point that I hadn't connected the dots, but it's true. I've read where these agents that are now on administrative leave, and then the horses got sent home. I don't know where they are, but they're now bad guys, these poor horses. But they usually cover not just one border agent, but this is a jurisdiction of over 200 miles. And you got to imagine that this border is not just, you know, paved roads and plumbing and sewer and gutter all the way across and electricity everywhere. You got to imagine this terrain would require, much like the forest agents that you were with or forest rangers you were with, to traverse terrain that really, without horses, how are they supposed to even do the job of patrolling what is, I read, is over 200 miles that they're supposed to be ensuring is a secure border. How are they going to do that without the horses, Sheriff?
Yeah, I mean, I know they use technology. I know they use ATVs and they use helicopters and those kind of things, but I don't know that you can replace the horses. You know, I read somewhere that the U.S. Border Patrol started with the horse unit at its inception in 1924, and then between the years of 59 and 79, they didn't use horses, and then starting in 79, they started the horse program again, and I think they have, I read somewhere that they have over 300 horses in their fleet now across the 200 plus miles border from San Diego to Texas. And another point that's important, I think, to put out there is they're getting horses from the Bureau of Land Management through their impound program from wild horses across the West. And they're running those horses through a training program in the prison system and having inmates train those horses. And then they're selecting horses that would be useful on the border, and they're taking down those horses down there and using them. And then one of the reasons they use those horses down on the border is because they're, you know, more environmentally friendly than some of the motorized and mechanized units that they don't like to use in certain areas, sensitive areas along the border. Yet they vilify them in a situation like this. I just think it's terribly unfortunate. They should be able to use those as a tool. And they should be able to, you know, to see the value in those and not vilify the use of those.
Kane County Sheriff Tracy Glover, I want to thank you for your just very even keeled, just truth to power, just explanation for the listeners of what the role of Border Patrol agents with the horses and what those circumstances look like. We're not getting enough of that. And I thank you so much for joining us on the program and kind of sharing that perspective that a lot of us don't have. And that we certainly need. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg.
Okay, we're coming to the break. When we come back, we have more. Look, we got a state senator that has cracked the code on all these business mandates. You've heard about Vivint Arena. We got a bill that's coming in the general session that I think is going to address this perfectly. But you're going to have to hang on to hear more about that.
An inspired life. Listen to the Good Risings podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Give him a Red Bull and, well, there's trouble. Who knows what he'll say next? Guest hosting for Rod today, Greg Hughes.
And we're back. Happy Friday. Happy Friday afternoon. Hope it's going to be a good weekend. Looks like the weather's good. This is a hot fall. Like, it's still really warm. It's not too warm, but I like it. I like the warmer weather. It's good. I hope everyone has a good weekend. Look, we're just going to keep charging along here on the Citizen Hughes Show. You are going to want to wait. We're going to have State Senator uh, Kirk Cullimore. He's the assistant whip in the Utah State Senate, and he has got a bill that you need to hear about, because I think that we are finally going to get to the bottom of these mandates. You've seen Florida and Governor DeSantis, and he came out very early this way, and he's been unapologetic. He has not blinked. But he does not allow, and their legislature and the state of Florida do not allow any government to or any business to mandate to the citizenry in Florida that they must receive medical procedures, vaccinations, produce passports or cards that would say they were vaccinated to be able to access businesses and things like that. And, you know, it's been successful, but he has had some criticism on the conservative side that he is, as a government, as a state government, intervening or interfering with private business and the private sector. And so there have been some that have thought that that might be an overreach in the state of Florida by Governor DeSantis. I do not concur, but that is a criticism that I have heard from a governor that it's hard to criticize. At least if you're a listener of this program and you're looking at this world, it's hard to look at Governor DeSantis and not be pretty impressed of the fearless leadership he's exhibiting in that state. But with all that said, I believe what you will hear in terms of a bill that has been filed and is being worked on currently and will be ready for the 2022 general session in January, that bill is going to, I think, thread this needle perfectly. And so you're going to have to wait for that interview to hear it, but I promise you it is worth the wait. You'll want to hear this because this is, I think it's bulletproof. And I think it really is it puts the ball right back in the court of everybody, every individual. You're a business owner, you're a patron, you're an employee. This thing's going to clear it all up, I think, or at least make it so that you can't be criticized one way or the other, because I think it's a fair approach. But let me just say this. We just heard from the sheriff from Kane County, Sheriff Glover. Really appreciate him coming on the program. Look, I got to be honest with you. I grew up in Pittsburgh. I don't ride horses. I have, I think, once or twice in my life, to be honest with you. But I have so many friends that do, and I've heard these discussions. And when these images came out, it did not take long for people to scoff who understand the role of horses in law enforcement or border patrol agents, or as you heard, these forest rangers that Sheriff Glover had spent some time with in Montana. And so if you ever had this concept of a fact check and fact checking stories and media stories, it should have been pretty quick to put this one to bed real quick. And we shouldn't be talking about it going on through the week like we have been. And they've doubled down. Folks, they've not only not admitted they are wrong, they've doubled down to say, well, you know what? We're going to go ahead and ban it. They don't want to be embarrassed. They want to say, no, we knew all that, and okay, it wasn't a whip, it's a rein, but we're still gonna ban it. So, you know, that's up to you to decide. I mean, I think that I just think it's a net loss. I mean, we don't have the wall that to secure that border that. It was said that President Trump would not be able to do, but we saw the construction of the wall. We saw a secure border. Have you heard President Biden say, I inherited this? I inherited this. This is his ongoing excuse. Whatever the problem is, it's not one of his making. It's something he's inherited. Most of the things he says he's inherited, it's just patently and verifiably not true. But the one thing you can't say is that he inherited a border that looks like the one we're seeing today. He did not inherit that. There was order. We were seeing that pendulum swing the other way, where we were seeing orderly crossings and we were seeing better cooperation. So those are things that we just have to continue to talk about, to point out, because if this story isn't going to go away, I'm not going away in terms of the selective logic, the selective outrage that's being applied by the Democrat Party in America today. We're going to keep talking about it. But I can't keep talking now because we're coming up on a break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking and speaking with Senator Kirk Cullimore of the Utah State Senate. It's that bill. You're going to want to hear about it, about mandates, business mandates. I hope the Vivint Arena folks are...
Summit, October 13th and 14th in Salt Lake City. Save your seat by visiting slopessummit.com.
Whee! Give me back my land. Give me
The Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Back to the Rod Arquette Show with today's guest host, Craig Hughes.
Man, the show's gone fast. Happy Friday. It's the Citizen Hughes Show filling in for the great Rod Arquette. It's taking some time off. I'm guest hosting. You know, it does go so fast. I've been waiting for this interview for the whole show. And we have to have another commercial break before we end up at the top of the hour. So I hope we can get all the good information in. But I have been teasing this throughout the show. Every time we go to commercial, I hear the news break, and I keep hearing the big announcement that Vivint Home Arena, where the Jazz play, home of the Utah Jazz, and lots of concerts and other events, they are going to require a vaccination card, proof of vaccination, full vaccination, or a test that shows that you do not have COVID that has been very recent. So they're getting into this medical space. So it's on our minds. We're hearing it right now. It's happening in real time. That's going to impact a lot of people when you think about people going to the Vivint Home Arena. Now, before I bring on our guests, let me just give a little bit of background. That when back in 2020, when COVID hit, and this pandemic, and we had that two-week, remember that flatten the curve two-week, year-and-a-half deal we started to go through? Well, there were some uncertain times there, and you saw our state legislature act and lead out immediately. And one of the things that I believe the legislature did wisely was we do live in a bit of a litigious society to some degree. And there are laws that where businesses and places of employment have to protect employees or have a safe environment to work in or patrons to frequent and visit. Well, when it came to this pandemic, there was in a special session, there was a bill passed by our guest, the assistant whip in the Utah State Senate, Kirk Cullimore, making sure that there were not legal liabilities that would be felt by companies, businesses, and even higher education, I think University of Utah, they would be shielded from legal liability in the event that someone caught COVID or had detrimental impacts because of COVID, whatever it may be. It was this that what we're going through right now. You would not want to see that have the effect of closing businesses and shutting down the economy any more than we've already endured. So that was something that the legislature has done. But now you see, as time has gone on, that businesses want to get involved in this space. They actually want to be in charge a little bit on what's going on with COVID and with employees or with patrons. So on the program we have now to discuss a bill that he is crafting to address whether businesses can or cannot mandate vaccinations from employees or patrons. Senator Cullimore, welcome to the Citizen Hughes Show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me.
So that's a long introduction, and I'm sorry. It probably took me too long to say it. But really, I cannot think of a more perfect lawmaker and leader to address the issue about businesses mandating vaccinations on citizens, be it employees or those that would visit their business, than the person who, in the special session in the early months of COVID-19 in Utah and America, you were looking to protect businesses from legal peril. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the bill that you filed and why?
Yeah, thanks. So I do get questions about, hey, at the beginning of the pandemic, you were protecting businesses. Now it seems like you're trying to hurt business. And I don't think that's the case at all. In fact, what we're doing is exactly as you described. Businesses provide goods and services, and they are not necessarily always in the business of protecting patrons or employees from every little thing. And so we wanted to give them immunity in the event that somebody contracted COVID and it's outside of their control. Well, now, the flip side of that same coin is, well, if you're going to decide that you do have control over that and that you want to jump into that arena, that's fine. We're not stepping on business rights to say you can't require mandates or whatever. But if you decide to do that, there may be some legal liability that follows. And so we need to address that in the law and set up the framework for that in the law.
I think you've cracked the code. I mean, if there's a Da Vinci code of how to get this right, okay, I think you've done it because you're giving businesses, and I would assume higher ed would be in this mix as well because they want to be part of your original bill. You're just saying pick a path. If you want to start mandating medical procedures and evidence of them and they want to be directly involved than if they get it wrong. And there's a detrimental impact if someone is harmed by it, or if something happens, if they're mandating it, there needs to be a consequence. Or it's the environment you described, where the businesses are not steeped in this area and would not know what to do. But you can't have it both. You can't enjoy all this immunity legally and jump into the space and start dictating to people what they can or can't do. Let me ask you this, Senator. What do you expect will happen? Because I don't think these mandates – is Vivint making any – Vivint Home Arena, who's in the news all day today, are they making any accommodations for people that would have exemptions from a vaccination, be it health reasons or religious reasons?
Well, that's one of the biggest problems we're seeing, Greg, is that people are mandating vaccines or – you know, and COVID highlighted this problem, right? It's COVID vaccines today, but what could it be tomorrow? And so we really need to address that statutorily. But you're exactly right. These mandates are not nuanced at all. There's a variety of reasons why people might conscientiously object to a medical procedure. Maybe they've already had COVID and their antibodies are still strong. Maybe they've got other medical issues going on. Maybe there's religious exemptions. And so without the nuance, it's really making it difficult, not only for employees, but patrons. And so we're getting into a brave new world with COVID, as it seems like we're doing every other week now. But we need to address it, and there's just nothing in the law. We've never really encountered this on a widespread scale.
We're speaking with the Assistant Whip in the Utah State Senate, Senator Kirk Cullimore, has a bill that is going to try and sort some of this out. We're seeing these new mandates that are coming across, and I think of businesses that have decided to do this, the Vivint Home Arena and those that would watch the Jazz play other games at the arena there and the concerts that people would want to go to. I think this one's going to strike home to the general public a little more deeply. But I did read a story about Delta Airlines, and Salt Lake City is one of their major hubs, where if their mandate for their employees is that if they don't produce a vaccination card, their paycheck is going to be docked $200 a month for the tests that Delta is going to have them go through to stay employed by Delta. So I guess when you run this bill, I imagine that it's just human nature, Senator. People want their cake and they want to eat it too. They want every immunity that you've passed in your legislation that means that they have no legal peril whatsoever, but then they're going to want to start dictating terms or getting into this space without any exemptions that would contemplate people's individual circumstances. The law is hard. How would people have standing, I guess? How do you structure a bill like this where you really do? You're going to the businesses are going to have to choose A or B. You're going to either enjoy that immunity or you're subject to the liability. How would somebody who's been forced to have a vaccination and their issues were not considered and say something detrimental happened to them, how would your bill protect them or let them seek accountability from their employer?
So that's a great question, and that's some of the stuff we're working through. But right now, conceptually, what we're saying is that a plaintiff would first have to show, or somebody harmed by the medical procedure mandate, would first have to show that they wouldn't have got the vaccine or a medical procedure but for that mandate. And that's kind of hard, right? Because if you've got multiple restaurants, somebody's going to argue, well, you didn't have to come into my restaurant because I require the vaccine. And so we've got to build in there some presumptions under the law of what they need to prove. Like if somebody is an employee, we're going to say, well, they didn't really have a choice. So in the employee-employer context, that may be a presumption that they get in the law. Or if there are businesses that are the only business in town for whatever good or service they provide, then a plaintiff may be able to overcome that presumption as well in the law. And so that makes the law tricky, but I think it's important that we do that because of these widespread mandates that we're seeing right now that may or may not even have an effect on public health.
So if you live in a rural community and maybe there's one supermarket, or if you'd like to go to an NBA Jazz game, but you only have one arena and one franchise in your city, state, county or state, or if you want to go to the symphony, these unique venues. So what's your hunch? I mean, you are you're a leader in the legislature. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think that businesses will want to maintain and retain their immunity from legal liability, or do you think they will give that up so they can start to mandate vaccinations?
You know, if we're able to get this bill passed, I think most businesses will look at this and say, yeah, what am I doing? Why am I stepping into this arena? This isn't what I do. I provide XYZ good or service, and I'm just going to keep doing that at the best level I can. I don't need to be telling people what they need to be doing for their own health and safety. So I think for the most part, that's the decision businesses will make. But this bill doesn't preclude the opportunity for businesses to decide that, hey, I'm willing to take on that liability. I feel comfortable with this. I feel more comfortable with the mandate than the liability. And so it gives them that option.
Senator Cullimore, thank you for your leadership. Thank you for, I think you're threading the needle on this. I think this gives businesses and individuals some decisions to make. I will certainly be, we'll be cheering along this bill, making sure it passes. This is medical freedom, freedom to make these choices for yourself. Good information drives good decisions. And only if you think people are fundamentally incompetent to make decisions and self-determine their lives, would you not want for people to have and retain that freedom to make those decisions. And you are fighting that, and I can't thank you enough. Also, thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Greg, and thanks for the support.
You were listening to Kirk Cullimore, Assistant Whip of the State Senate, and that is a bill that is going to address these mandates that you're seeing businesses roll out and start to require of employees and patrons. I think it's an elegant solution. We'll see where it goes as it progresses towards the general session. We'll be back. We're coming up on the last break before the end of the show.
October 13th and 14th in Salt Lake City. Save your seat by visiting slopessummit.com.
Left jab, right hook. Guest hosting for Rod today is frustrated boxer Greg Hughes.
And we are back. Man, we have just a few minutes to close the show out. The Citizen Hughes Show coming to an end. These 3 hours, they just go too fast. I always get frustrated on Wednesdays when Rod lets me call in. We do two segments, the 6 o'clock hour on Wednesdays, and I always feel like I didn't even begin to get into the issues that we're all confronting every single day. I get 3 hours, and I got the same feeling right now as we end this show on a Friday afternoon, starting our weekend. Let me just say, let's see, I've got just a couple minutes, but the one article I was never able to get to during the program was the one that was from Red State, where Kara Davis, she makes good fun of an LA Times reporter who complained. She actually didn't complain. She reported, clutching her pearls all the while, that there are not bathrooms and showers at these areas where people are illegally crossing the border. And so the article is Kara explaining that, yeah, when you don't cross at a legal border crossing, it might be the case in the middle of nowhere or along a long border where you're not supposed to cross, it isn't plumbed. It doesn't have running water. It doesn't have electricity. There isn't any sewer. There aren't toilets or showers in the areas where you would illegally cross the border. And it just shows, it's kind of, I think it's related to the same types of journalists that see these Border Patrol agents on horses, and they attach absolutely verifiably false narratives to them. And then they don't give it up. They're not gonna back down once even proved wrong. And we fortunately on this program explained that with Sheriff Glover from Kane County. Listen, it's over. I hear the music going. Thank you for joining me.